And without missing a beat, I just go, "Will you produce my thesis in 2 years?" He goes, "What's the story?" I'm like, "I have no idea, but we're going to film it in Alabama." And he's like, "Okay."
Wow.
And
faith.
And then he made me sign a contract stating that I would stay on the project.
Yeah.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Center Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
I'm Ben Gertz in beautiful Portland, 70 degrees.
And I'm Thomas Horton. I'm not sure what temperature it is in Los Angeles right now.
What is it right now?
It's always the same. Let's change. Yeah, I don't have to always.
68.
I don't have to always do the weather, guys. I'm just glad to be back on.
It's 68 in Los Angeles, so it's...
glad to be back on.
It's nice. It's nice outside. So it's been a while for you two to be on the show. At least a month. Possibly even longer.
Not that you're counting, but we appreciate the welcome.
I mean, it's fine. It's whatever. No big deal.
Don't worry. Thomas has got a big mission accomplished banner behind him.
We did it.
You guys have been busy.
We have been busy in the summer and currently. But before we get into that, I want to just do it real quick. What have you guys been watching?
Let's start with giggles, because you guys are going to make fun of me. And it's worth making fun of, but okay, a friend that I used to work with made a joke about a Cylon on Twitter, and I had to respond on Twitter and say, "What is a Cylon? What do?" And I had Googled it, of course. And Battlestar Galactica. So I've been going back, and I'm on, like, episode 5 or something, and now I know what a Cylon is.
All right.
I'm in. This is what, like, 15 years too late or something, but... I'm catching up.
Congrats.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thomas.
Let's see. You're the Worst is back. Big fan of season 3 starting up. Season 2 was amazing. It's not really publicized that well, so I don't think a lot of people have watched it, but it's on FXX. And it's a comedy, 30-minute comedy, but like very dark comedy. It's just a bunch of terrible people. It kind of centers around a couple that are both really messed up people, but they are together anyway. And it's really good. Like, season 1 was just kind of like shock dark humor, and then season 2 dealt a lot with one of the main characters' depressions in like a really realistic way, and now season 3 is off to a great start too. I'm also on the same line of FXX, because there's a lot of great programming on FXX right now. My roommate and I recently started watching Man Seeking Woman, which is amazing. It's Jay Baruchel and Eric Andre, and it's like, it's kind of sketch, but not like it follows a real storyline. Like, it follows a character throughout his like dating life, but it's done extremely over the top, like you would do a sketch show. So, like, he'll go out on a date, and the pilot, his sister sets him up on a blind date, and when he gets there, it's, like, a literal troll. It's actually, like, a monster. And he's like, I don't want to go on this date. She's a troll. And they're like, "That's so shallow of you. Like, she's really smart, and she's cultured." And he's like, "Yeah, but she's a troll." And they're like, "Oh, don't be like that, man. Don't worry about looks." So it's stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
I like this. Mm-hmm. I love this.
There's also in the pilot, there's a section where he goes to a party being hosted by his ex-girlfriend, and she's dating someone new, and it's Hitler. And no one seems to have a problem with it, but he'll be like, "He's awful."
These premises are laugh out loud.
It's
I love
awful.
This.
It's Hitler. And they're like, "Oh, you're just saying that because he's dating your ex-girlfriend." It's good stuff.
I'll watch that in a decade or so.
So for me, I've been watching a good bit of movies as usual. I'll just name out two real quick. Ben, I watched one of your favorite movies for the first time a few days
ago. Short Term 12?
No. For the first time. I've seen Short Term 12.
Okay.
All the Real Girls.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, I've been... No, I enjoyed it because I for some reason I wanted to do like David Gordon Green like kind of kick in a way. And not all of his stuff is good because he took a left turn at one point in his career. But I rented All the Real Girls from Cinephile, and then Snow Angels, which I haven't seen yet. And so I'll probably do another one like Prince Avalanche or Joe or whatever following that. But yeah, I loved it. I mean, probably Zooey Deschanel's best performance in my opinion is All the Real Girls. And the guy, oh gosh, what's the lead actor's name?
Yeah, and he's every, like, he blew up after the the film.
He popped up in like Elizabethtown and for Cameron Crowe's movie.
Yeah, and he was also, he had a pretty good role in Assassination of Jesse James. I think you're right. I think Zooey Deschanel's performance is one of the most like naturalistic. Like, that's part of what's so great about the film. And you've got gosh, so many of the people that David Gordon Green has collaborated with now for all of his comedies.
Yeah, Danny McBride's
in there, and he's funny, but again, there's like there's this sort of like groundedness to it all, very natural. Tell me this though, Brandon. You've seen it once now?
Yeah, once now.
Because that's a film I've gone back and watched, like, not a ton, but 5, 6, 7 times, which for me is a lot. But it's so interesting looking back at the structure of it because, you know, they took so long in making it, as far as, like, you know, filming it on weekends and all these sorts of things. It's really interesting to pick up, like, the VO. They use a lot of, like, off-screen voiceover to kind of transition some of these, like, really... Ultimately, like, you kind of start to see some of the stitching, you know what I mean? The seam lines and a few things, but first run through, it's beautiful. Especially the opening, that opening scene is is beautiful.
Just that one.
All right, t-shirt. Y'all got to tell me who this actor is now, because I have
Paul Schneider. No idea. Paul Schneider.
Oh,
gotta love you some Paul Schneider.
Neither of y'all are Parks and Rec watchers, I'm assuming. Mark Brendanicus.
Guys, my cue. Come on. I you know,
he got,
20 years.
My cue.
He left Parks and Rec to make room for Adam Scott. His character wasn't generating enough chemistry with Amy Poehler, so he got the bump.
Oh, that sucks.
And Adam Scott came in like season 3.
Oh, wow. Well, anyway, yeah, David Gordon Green is the one who kind of got him started, because he was also in George Washington, apparently. And
have you gone back that far? Like, are you chronologically watching David Gordon Green?
No, I did All the Real Girls to know it was one of your favorite films, and so I wanted to see what you were talking about. And George Washington.
Kind of when someone cares enough to, like, you know, go with a recommendation.
And then George Washington will be another one soon. But no, I really loved it, and like I thought it was a great movie, and because I got it from Cinephile, and they were the guy who works there, Matt. Was talking about that in Snow Angels and like how much he loves Snow Angels and how great Sam Rockwell is in it. So I gotta check that out soon. But yeah, that was one film that I watched. And another film that Thomas and I watched this past Friday or recently was I Drink Your Blood, which was not as bad as it seems. Ben, because I was like,
that's how Brandon looked when I drug him into it too.
I wasn't judging it based on the title. I was just curious.
Yeah, I Drink Your Blood. It was because when we were talking about going to see a movie recently, and I was like, well, let's go see Hell or High Water. That's in theaters. Comes out like 10, or comes out 10:30. He goes, I'm really feeling the midnight movie at Newart for I Drink Your Blood, and I'm like, really? Like, seriously? And he goes, yeah, I really want to go. I'm like, okay, let's do it. And I loved it. Like, it was, I thought it was great.
Is this a horror movie? It's such a bad movie.
It's a horror movie, but it's comedy.
It's a B movie. It's a grindhouse movie from 71.
It's so good.
But it's one of those that you enjoy for how terrible it is.
Like, the premise of it is that a group of hippies, it's in the 70s, like, come to this small town, and they're this satanic group, the hippies are, and they come to this small town, they terrorize some people, and the kid who's in the movie that, like, works this bakery, he kills a dog that has rabies, and he takes rabies from the dog and inserts it into these meat pies to give to the hippies. And so the hippies, essentially, they just get rabies, all of them. And, like, it spreads throughout the town. It's like, oh, it's so great.
So it's a zombie rabies movie?
You could say that. I mean, it's like they all become, yeah, they all become zombies in a way. With, like, foam with a mouth, like, chasing after people. And
that seems zombie-like.
Yeah, it's zombie-like. They just move really fast. It's really weird stuff. My favorite line of the entire movie, after all the stuff happens and people are dead, everything settles down, the doctor's taking the people that have been rescued, and he just goes, well, what can you do? And, like, that's the end of the movie.
That's how it ends?
That's pretty much like...
I had Brandon really worried, though, because I'm a huge B-movie fan, so I had always heard of that one as, like, being one of the best ones. But, like, when we went to talk to the guys at Cinephile before we went in, and Brandon was like, yeah, this isn't my type of movie. Like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about it. And so I was like, yeah, it's supposed to be really gory. Like, it's going to be crazy. And I'm like, just played it off like it was something serious until we got into it.
Because even the Cinephile guy's like, yeah, man, I was like, I hope I don't throw up. But, oh, don't worry, I think you will. And I'm just like, great. And then even like in the theater, the guy who's announcing, like, the guy who's announcing it is like, if you have popcorn bags and drinks, make sure you have them to throw up with them later. And I was just like, I looked at Thomas like, what did you get me into? Like, I don't know if I can deal with this. And then within the first, like, 5 minutes, I'm just like, oh, okay, this is pretty bad. Like, and it's a fun movie to watch. It's a real fun movie to watch. But anyway, let's move on to what we want to talk about tonight.
Brandon, tell us about fun movies to watch that might be coming out soon that are shorter, like a short film.
Okay. That's the beginning of your questioning?
That was my transition. You're supposed to pick it up and say, oh,
well, perfect segue.
Well, you're going to have like a year to wait. Like, it doesn't come out until May.
Anticipation is everything, Brandon.
Okay, well, so...
All right, so tell everybody, you guys have been busy. We teased it, and it was not anything mischievous. It was a short film. Your thesis project, right?
Yeah, our thesis project for USC, and we shot it about a month ago in early August in Alabama. So at a camp, so it was almost all outside. So it was hot and humid.
Roll Tide.
And we introduced a couple of the LA people to the great culture of Alabama. And the great culture of Alabama football, and the preseason
Roll Tide of everything.
Oh yeah, it's like our AD, when she got to town, we were walking to Ramajamas because we were staying near there, and we're walking, and everyone was like really nice. Like, hey, how are you? Like, as we're walking the sidewalk, and she's really thrown off by it because she's from Philadelphia area and from LA.
Not a lot of how, like, are you doing in Philly?
Apparently not. She goes, why is everyone so, like, what's up with the pleasantries? And then one guy's like, Roll Tide. I'm like, Roll Tide? And she goes, what does that mean? And I'm like...
means whatever you want it to mean.
I explained it to her. I was just like, here's the thing. If you ever get lost in the city and you need help, say Roll Tide and then ask the person your question. You're going to get help. And she goes, you're joking. I'm like, I'm not joking. Like, that's how it is. And even on set, because we always kept saying Roll Tide to, like, anything that happened. And she goes, is there any time, like, is there a moment where, like, Roll Tide is not the right thing to say? And then I showed her that ESPN video where, like, everyone's... And she goes, okay, apparently it's okay for every moment. And...
I'd use it a lot for, like, oh, man, yeah, it's just started raining.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
I think that's like peak and optimal. I actually had a recruiter here in town who found out I was like from Alabama and sent me. He was like, "Oh, you're from Alabama. You got to see this video." And I was like, "Bro, you're like 5 years too late." And you're that's me late. Saying it.
When Ben says you're late, you know you're late. Yeah. But yeah, so we shot it about a month ago, and we had been, script wise, we had been working on it since January.
Yeah, I read some of those early drafts. Or drafts, not even early. I read quite a few. Yeah.
There was ended up being 17 drafts by the end of it. Basically, a draft per page in a way, because it ended up being like 16 pages. And so
the first draft was one page long.
The funny part was is that, I mean, the first draft, because it kept getting longer as I wrote, which usually happens. And then you were up to
30 pages for a while there. I think I read a second draft or a first, like one of those drafts you sent was like 26, 27.
Yeah.
You were nudging up towards 30.
There was
because he at one point he went like out into the mountains or into the desert or whatever, in this case Disneyland, and was like, because we were budgeting, and I was like, we can't budget for how long this script is, like we can't afford this script right now. And he went away. He was like, all right, I'm going to Disneyland, I'll have you a script in 4 days. And he like responds with, this is the worst text to get from Brandon. It's just the opening text just says, don't be mad. And then he sends that. And then you get the little apple, the three dots moving as he's typing. He goes, but it's 5 pages longer now. And I was like, we sent you there to make it simpler.
Well, exactly. And what happened was it got longer when I went to Disney, but it was a draft. And essentially, that was, even though it was halfway through the writing process, that was essentially the framework where I really just started chipping away at what scenes I didn't need.
Right.
And I had a professor who said, he's like, this sounds really crazy, but I knew what he meant. He goes, there's too much 1, 2, 3, 4. It needs to be 1, 5, 12, 15, 20. Like, you don't need all this stuff in between. Like, you don't need the shoe leather where like people are going and doing this. You don't need the simple, like,
there was an early one there where you were kind of like following the lead character into the camp and to the hut and unpacking the bag and all that.
And he was like, we've all seen a camp movie. We know how they are. Like, we know, like, people get to camp, they arrive there. We know what the kind of place looks like. We know there's someone that doesn't always like it. And he gave a really good, we had like an hour long conversation. We had 2 hour long conversations about it. And I remember one of the best notes he gave for anything I do after this was, he said, like, almost at the very end of the conversation, he goes, start your movie however you want to, because no one knows what it is yet. So it doesn't have to make sense how you start it. And so
that's great advice. That's really interesting.
I'm like, oh, okay. Because basically he's like, they have the rest of the movie to catch up to, like, what's going on. Hmm. And I'm like, okay. And so I changed the opening. Was really different compared to what it was before. Because she is still arriving at the camp, but now she's arriving when everyone else arrives.
And so let's for the audience, a little short synopsis. It's a camp movie.
Mm-hmm. So basically, it's about our character, Jessie, who she gets ordered to do community service as a camp counselor. And while at the camp, she befriends a young camper who is an outsider like her, and she helps him fit in with the rest of the camp. That's the basic two-sentence thing. It's a comedy, but I mean it's more of a dramedy, in all honesty. Like, it's not like laugh out loud comedy to me, at least.
There's not a lot of knee slappers. Like, it's not constructed around setting up comedic huge scenes.
The comedy comes from just, I think, with this more the real life situations the characters are in, and not like, it's not jokey, if that makes sense.
They're smart characters. Yeah, exactly. They have smart, realistic things to say in response to what's happening around them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's more like old Ghostbusters than new Ghostbusters.
Whoa.
Okay, making some digs here.
I haven't been on the show since I saw New Ghostbusters.
But thank you. You just compare our movie to Ghostbusters. That's great.
Well, let's be clear. Thomas was one of the. You were the producer. The lead producer.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So to go into that because that's the story as well. So Thomas, our first semester at USC. We were in the same like intro class. We were in, it's called 507 at USC. Thomas, I think we actually, you and I don't know if you remember this, we actually got lost together at USC the first day of 507. We couldn't find the elevator and we just like had to walk up the back stairs and we're like, you going to this room? Yeah. So am I. And that's kind of how. That's how we met. We're all tied.
That's where Camp Nichols came from.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
An elephant never forgets.
Yeah, and so he was wearing a yellow shirt, which is the color of the camp shirts now. This is all what I don't know.
It's not where I don't wear yellow shirts.
So
except the camp shirts.
Except the camp shirts. Yeah. So basically, what happened was about midway through the semester, Thomas, we're sitting next to each other, and Thomas just goes, "You know what? Like, I've done the directing thing for these few films," and he's like, "I don't want to do it anymore. I want to produce. That's what I want to do." And without missing a beat, I just go, "Will you produce my thesis in 2 years?" And he goes, "What's the story?" I'm like, "I have no idea, but we're gonna film it in Alabama." And he's like, "Okay." And
wow. Faith.
And then he made me sign a contract stating that I would stay on the project.
Yeah. Now, and we didn't really talk about it for about a year. Until
I was going through some stuff, so
yeah.
We didn't have time to talk about it.
Yeah, that's true.
We didn't have time
that's
to talk
true.
About your thesis.
That's true. No, and then it got to our third semester, our second year, where he's like, "Are you serious about doing this?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And it's like, okay, and that's around the time he came on the podcast, and we just from then on, since that first conversation, he was producing it. And from there with Hartley, which is what we did in January, which we'll probably talk a little bit about that film and this film, he was there from prep to post in a way, reading the scripts and giving me advice on it. And especially with Camp Nichols, because I think when it came, cause we had a class at USC for thesis prep, and I think we were the only ones that had a director producer for that project. Everyone else was just the writer director. There was no producer attached to the project. People slowly started getting them in about a few weeks later, but we were the first to have like a producer already attached that was there from the very beginning of making the project. And the idea for Camp Nichols, because this is kind of important, everyone else is coming into the semester like having an idea, like they've worked on for like a year or whatever. I had no idea what I was going to do coming into it. I went off Christmas break to shoot another film, Hartley, and I was so consumed about that. And I was like, I have to come up with an idea for a movie to make because I have to pitch it in 2 weeks. And I had nothing. I had a character, which was the character of Zach, who's not the main character, but I just had that character is all I had. And I was driving around my neighborhood late one night, I think about to start filming Hartley or in the middle of filming Hartley. And I said, "Oh, we have a camp in town. What if we put that character at the camp? That'd be kind of fun." And it just became...
Is this your internal monologue or is this you talking to someone else in the car?
No, this is me. No, this is just me talking. Like, this is my internal monologue. I'm like, "Oh, that could be interesting."
Do you externalize this while you're driving? Do you talk to yourself?
No, I don't do that. I listen.
I'm really not that worried. I'm just asking.
No. What I do, Thomas knows from example, I drive around a lot.
I used to do that in film school. Seriously, I did all sorts of driving around LA.
Circled the entire city of Tuscaloosa about 4 or 5 times just in circles.
I did so many tours.
Look, there's the hill where so-and-so did so-and-so.
But, you know, for me, like, I do that, cool. though, because it's one of the few times where you can feel okay about just thinking.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Because if you just sit in a chair at your house or it's somewhere else, like a coffee shop, you're like kind of a weirdo, right? Or there's a million other things you can get up and go do. But if you're driving, then you are driving. You can't do anything else other than think for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. See, I have to be moving, and even I'm not moving, like my body is not moving, but the car itself is moving, and I have to. It keeps me going in a weird way, and I've been doing it since high school. Like I've been doing that since high school. People that went to my high school would see me riding around my neighborhood late at night and think I was crazy. Like I am highly aware of all this, but it was just a way the way I process things and how I came up with ideas. And so I was driving around, about to go home
in your Prius.
What was I at? It was my dad's car. but thank you for the Jeff Dunham joke. And so I came up with the idea and I was like, okay. And so we shot Hartley. The day after we wrapped, I wrote the first draft of that of Camp Nichols.
Wow.
Like it was that quick. And then I think I flew back to LA. I think I wrote half of it. I flew back to LA, and then the night I got into LA, I wrote the second half of it and then pitched it the next day is what happened.
So I have to ask some prodding questions here, other than the talking to yourself in the car. That was just an aside. But Thomas, at this stage, you're attached, but you've never read it. You don't even know the premise. So when he pitches it...
I don't even know that it exists yet.
When he pitches it, are you hearing it for the first time in the classroom with everybody else? Is that a thing?
I think you had like texted me that it was going to be a camp and that you already had a location in mind.
Yeah.
But probably the first time I heard a fully fleshed out pitch was in that class, because that was our first class of the semester. It was Monday morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. And I'm looking back on it from my perspective, that sounds really crazy. That I would do that, because we produced it together, and I have a producer's mindset when it comes to things, and that's just I would never do that again.
Trust is a positive way to spend this. Thomas has an exceptional amount of trust.
But the other thing was too is I kept him updated of like it's a camp. I think I might have said one brief sentence to you of like the log line. But I know I said, how do you feel about doing a camp movie? He goes, I love camp movies. And I'm like, well, we're doing a camp movie. and that's how that came to be. And then I wrote like a 24 page draft to turn in that day, and they didn't even ask for it. And I was like, oh, okay. And so by the time I actually turned one in, I was on draft 3 is where I was at.
And that's the point where I was reading all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. He read every draft, I think he read every draft. There might've been some in there like where I did 3 in like 3 straight days. And then you read the last one out of those 3. But yeah, you read almost every draft.
For the structure of this class, so this is like a spring semester, right? And then the film was shot this summer. So is it still ongoing? Like, you guys have already started back up with classes. So is there like a fall component to this too, where it's like a year long?
Yeah, there. It's really the thesis thing. They don't tell you at first. It's almost a 2-year process. It's pretty close. It says it's a year, but when you look at semester wise, it's close to a 2-year process, because
you're gonna be like pushing yourself in post if you only give yourself a year.
Yeah.
For the whole thing.
It's like, so we started prepping in spring. We shot in the summer, which not everyone does.
Okay.
And then that I wanted to give us more time for post-production, essentially. And also, too, was the logistics of it, of we shoot in the summer, we don't have to worry about school. The people we're bringing from USC or UCLA, in some instances, they don't have to worry about school. Also, too, we're shooting in Alabama. We still have people who live in Alabama who do film there, who go to UA that I've worked with before. They'll be in school if we're shooting in fall. So it was more just a logistical issue of having crew and cast there all at the same time.
Well, and we were trying to find that sweet spot, because when you introduce a camp into it, we had to find that like week where they weren't having camp sessions, but also the kids in Tuscaloosa weren't in school yet, so they could come out and be extras
Wow, yeah.
for us. So There was really 1 week that we could shoot this in.
And even then, that week was, we still had, school started the week we shot. So we had to plan around about three days out of the 6 day shoot of
two. The school started on Thursday.
Okay. Yeah. So we had to plan around those 2 days to do, and our main kid, he had to take off 1 day of school, which he was really excited about.
Sure. To be in a short film, that's pretty dope.
Yeah. He's just like, and we're like, you're in, go to your school and you're just gonna be like the most popular kid there. So it was a difficult task, and it's like Alabama in August. That sounds great.
Never again.
Yeah,
no, I don't think I would wish that on my enemies. You know what I mean? Like, no. I know enough to know that that's horrific. A bloodletting of sorts.
That was the hardest thing was the weather. And I've shot, like I tell people, so I've shot a winter, I never do this again. I shot a winter movie in December, or in the December, January time, when it's the coldest in Alabama. And then I shot a summer movie in August, which when it's the hottest in Alabama.
There's other times that are decent in Alabama.
Yeah.
You could write a fall love story, for example.
Well, that's the next thing.
Dare I say a football-themed, Roll Tide-inspired...
Well, yeah, that's the problem. It's that you hit fall, and I don't know where I'm going to house my crew. Yeah,
exactly. Because everywhere we house them at...
In Tuscaloosa.
The place we stayed at, we had everyone... We all stayed in, like, one big house. Most of the crew members that were coming from out of town. So it was like a big, huge... I mean, it was a commune in a way. It was like we all had like our own apartments.
It's complex.
Complex. That's a better way of saying it.
There was no religion involved.
There was no religion involved, except movies.
Just the film.
Just the film, which is a religion itself sometimes. That's where we're at, and that's a big football heavy place where they like rent out during football season. It's like an Airbnb. Stuff like, yes, Ben, what are you going to say?
Do you renounce all other films? Will you?
for that brief time, you do.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
And
no, because you made us watch Indian Summer.
we watched Midnight in Paris and Indian Summer. That was the two things we watched.
And The Church.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, so don't make me blush on a podcast.
Well, no, one thing we did, and it sounds crazy, but it was kind of a team building thing, where one night we just watched all the films we made.
Like, yeah, that'll build a team, Brandon. That'll build
a team. It's like, because the thing is, when you're bringing, when you're bringing USC people that haven't really worked with us that much, because most of the crew that was working on this film had worked together for a number of years. Like, mm-hmm. It's weird, and we're only like the older, like in our early to mid 20s, but majority of us have worked together for 3 to 4 years at least. And so we've made a lot of films. And we use the same kind of actors over and over again. It's like, so with this film, for example, three of the six main actors I had worked with previously on multiple projects. So if you go back and watch our projects from Alabama, you'll see all these same actors pop up. And then you'll see the same crew names. You'll see Mark, my DP, pop up, or you'll see
shout out your to name the Patterson.
Yeah, and or you'll see Bryce Denton, who's been on the show, or Dusty Fields, and you'll see all that. And so for us, it's like
thanks for the music, Dusty.
Thanks. it was a team building thing, because and then Thomas showed some of his films from when he was growing up, and
from the YouTube era.
And then, like, Mark showed some of his films that he made in high school, and then I showed none of mine. I showed a few of mine that we made in college. And then we just, a lot of campus movie fest stuff. Like, we all just started sending videos, and we're all in, like, one, like, the big, huge living room. You have, like, 20 people eating pizza or whatever, watching these films. And so that was after our short day. Because we had a short day right in the middle of shooting that was 7 hours, which is like kind of unheard of.
Yeah, for you, that's what happened.
Yeah.
I kept him on a tight schedule.
Yeah. Because
we followed union rules.
We did.
That's encouraging, because when I made my breakout performance role in when I appeared in Hartley, I was an extra, and I was there for 8-some hours, and I left, and other people continued to film, and I was like, dude, I am out of here.
Oh, no, we did location moves.
When y'all were shooting Hartley, I just remember one night, and I was on the East Coast, so I was pretty much the same time zone as y'all, and I'm going to bed one night at like 2 a.m., and I just get a Snapchat from Hunter that it's like, making the third company move of the day. We still have one more to go after this.
Yeah.
I was like, not on my side.
It was never that bad. That's a big exaggeration. But that I will say Hartley, that was nothing that really helped us, was that I had made a film in Alabama in January. And my whole idea around that was that it was the test run for the thesis. That's where you had to figure out the problems. We'd spend less money. It was a smaller script, so it had two characters, and that was it. It had more locations overall, in all honesty. We moved a lot more. But it was like, okay, we got done with that film, and it was like, okay, what's the problems? What can we fix? Okay, we shot a 16-page script in 4 days. We need more days. So we added 2 more days to Camp Nichols, and it's about the same length of script. Actually, it's shorter. It was like, okay, have more prep days. We only had literally one prep day, and this time we had like 3 or so. And also we had meetings kind of periodically from like April to when we shot with certain crew members, or I did at least. I think you did as well with certain people, Thomas. And another thing don't go over 12 hours. And that's what we, adding the 2 days is what helped that, because we would have had an extra day on Hartley, we would never have gone over 12 hours or over 4. Like, well, one day we did.
Y'all were going over like well over 12.
Yeah, we were doing, in all honesty, we were doing 14-hour days and one 15-hour day. And I gotta be honest with you, looking back, I'm like, I don't know why this crew came and worked me again. But what I learned over time was feed crew well. Because most, they're all doing it for free. Feed them well, house them if they're not from there, and create an environment that allows them to be a collaborator in it, not just be like the dictator of you do my vision or whatever. It's right. I like hiring people to bring something new to the film that I wouldn't bring. And that's in every position. So it's like Thomas brings something, a perspective I don't have, and he'll add things that make the film so much better from a logistical standpoint and a creative standpoint. Or Mark brings something that brings the look to it. Or our production designers, Steven and Emma, who had never met before this film, but like I was like, I think they worked well together and they did phenomenal. They all bring something to the table, and that's the big thing, because when you're not getting paid, you don't want to be like given like limitations and rules of what not to do. You want to feel like you're a part of the process.
It's very easy to get very motivated, right, when kind of grumblings and rumblings of, hey, we're not getting fed, hey, we're doing 16-hour days, and then somebody starts going, well, he doesn't know what he's doing, you know, that whole thing. Once it spirals down just a little bit, the plane starts diving very quickly. You know, and there's not a good way to rebound, because then you're probably going to start getting behind schedule, and then it just gets, you know, it's out of control at that point. You have to let people feel like they have some ownership, and I felt that when I was deciding which French fry to eat in that, Thomas, this is the thing, is so you whip this thing into shape, right? You said no 12-hour day, no beyond 12-hour days. And then the location with the camp, right? That's the other thing, is I remember getting texts like week before shooting, 2 weeks before shooting. You guys were still hammering out which camp, right?
No.
Okay.
We had a couple of verbal confirmations, but we were just waiting on the paperwork for Camp Horn. But that was always our plan A, and we had a plan B, but didn't really want to go to it.
Yeah, plan B would have been finding different locations for almost every scene. Like, it would have been traveling.
And we wouldn't have we wouldn't have made, because that would be like real company moves. See, the thing with the thing that was pretty just, you know, amazing about Camp Horn was there were a lot of locations. Like, we weren't shooting, you know, all in on one field or by one building. Like, we had a ton of locations to choose from, multiple lakes, multiple like forest areas. We were moving all around. We were shooting in a lot of cool locations, but we were never making what I would really call a company move, because we were never like, we'd load up the truck and we'd move it to a new location, but we were never pulling out onto the highway. We were never piling everyone into cars, packing up and going somewhere. We always had one base camp. We always had like one parking lot, and then just kind of shuffling people around the camp from there. So that is part of the reason we were able to make it in the schedule that we did put together, was we were never really doing what is traditionally a company move. Because, you know, when you're shooting in Los Angeles, a company move is hours, depending on whatever traffic you hit. Yeah, so we were just driving up some dirt roads. So the travel, you know, we might have to pack up the truck and move it 5 minutes, but that was about it.
I will say the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems we had to deal with, like, cause luckily we didn't have to do much with company moves, but the biggest thing that interrupted a lot of our schedule would be rain. Because in L.A., you don't have to deal with rain. Like, if you, like, I think Mark said it one day, he's like, if it rains in L.A., they just canceled the day. Like, all of it, because they don't know how to deal with it. But with us...
But it doesn't rain in
LA. It doesn't rain in L.A. Like, it's a freak, like, anomaly when it does, and you're kind of prepared for when it's going to happen.
It's a desert, is why.
Yeah.
It's not a... Okay.
But so with, as long as we're clear. So with us, like, in the South, as you know, you're just going to have every day in the summer, sometimes at least 2 hours of rain spread out throughout the day. And it could be very heavy, or it could be kind of light, just sprinkling. And that was our biggest... It rained every day. And
I'd say my primary job on that set was just, like, being glued to the weather radar on my phone. And I had a direct walkie line to the assistant director, Jenna. And Brandon was not on that walkie line. So I could get on the walkie and be like, hey, Jenna, don't tell Brandon, but there's a giant thunderstorm blowing up. And she'd be like, okay, do we want to... It looks like it might go south. Like, it might just barely miss us. Do we want to just, like, keep going and not tell Brandon? And I'd be like, yeah, that sounds best. Let's do that.
They would hold it from me until about, like, maybe 5 minutes. Until
it was absolutely necessary. Until,
like, about 5 minutes forward, it's like, it's not going by us. Like,
there were two specific instances where Mark was like, let's get the shot. And I'd be like, it's going to rain. He'd be like, no, I can do it. And he'd just set something up and get it off. And it would just start pouring as soon, like, we'd call cut and just, it would pour.
I remember that one.
And Mark would just kind of walk off like, yeah, I got it.
There was the one day where I can't remember what day it was on. It was when I think it was day five when we were doing the arrival at camp. And it was the big, huge master shot that we did. And we did four takes. And literally on the fourth take, I go, cut, and the bottom just lets out, and it just starts pouring right when I say it, and we're just like, everyone get inside now, and like all these kids are running in the rain trying to get into our headquarters, and we're just like,
that's potentially the movie have been making, is a crew trying
and
to,
so then, okay. then we're all just like, we're under a tent that I think Dusty or Bryce brought, I can't remember, and we're all like huddled under the tent, we're like, what do? We're like, well, it could be gone a half hour. Let's just wait. And so we're just waiting underneath the tent, all the crew, and just all in like rain jackets and everything, just covering the equipment, and just having to wait until it stopped raining.
And then it stops, and the sun comes out, and all the rain turns into humidity.
Yep.
And it's still 98 degrees, and now it's about 95% humidity.
Yeah. It's That was one of the toughest parts, was the rain.
I mean, well, I guess I'm surprised. I know Patterson's kind of a BA, and of course would be able to make those shots work. But I panic when it rains with all the gear. Like, did you guys lose any gear? Like, you know, no red cameras were fried in the making of this masterpiece. No audio mic, you know, lav mics that got soaked or something.
I mean, that's great about Mark.
That's my nightmare.
About Mark Bryce Denton, who's our first AC, and then Marissa, who was our second AC, they made it possible to shoot in the rain if need be. Like, Bryce and them were always on, like, when it started to sprinkle, they had bags and stuff that they could put over the RE and put over all the equipment to where we could still shoot if need be. And it was more just...
Yeah, I mean, we shot through drizzles a couple of times. The main, you know, we were more concerned about actors looking wet on camera than we were about the camera, because the cam... You know, they told us early on, I think the first day Bryce came out to me and was like, I'm ready to go with rain gear. And so we never really had to worry about the camera. We just kind of trusted them to have it covered.
Bryce,
that was a pro. I will say this was, for me, with the of everyone involved, and a lot of them I worked with for a number of times, but as a director, it was one of the, I hate to say this, but and for lack of a better word, one of the easiest shoots. Because the people who were involved made, like, Thomas is the big person who did this, was that made it possible for me just to direct and not worry about if it's going to rain or if this person's here on time, like, if this person's late or this person's car got stuck in the road. We have to go figure this out, which happened. And
but you didn't know about it.
I knew about it. Now, here's the thing. I knew about because the actor called me up, and he goes, hey, my car got stuck. I'm on this back road nearby. Can you help me? And I go, hold on one second. And I go to my line producer, Jonathan Norris, and I go, take care of this. And I walk away. Because they spoiled me in the first 2 days, 2 or 3 days, when I didn't have to do anything. And I was just like, you're here now, and so Jonathan and Thomas talked it over and handled it. And Thomas had to wait on a back road in Cottondale, waiting for AAA to show up to pull this guy's car out of the road.
I got yelled at by a guy in a mechanic's uniform named Roy. He would keep yelling at me for getting my car stuck in the road, and I would keep explaining to him that it wasn't my car, but he didn't care. He just wanted to complain about people driving badly on that dirt road.
Did you preface the conversation with a Roll Tide? Because that could have been your...
That could have been helped. The saving grace right there.
Well, I don't want to speak badly of the people of Cottondale, because we did have two people from down the street try and dig the car out. And then one guy went and got his tractor and was, like, ready to pull it out himself with his tractor. So they were very hospitable, other than Roy. Roy was not happy to have me there, but everybody else was great.
But, yeah, it was stuff like that to where, like, because when I was doing Hartley, I had to worry about so much on a producing standpoint. Like, I had to do, like, is the food here? Is this happening? And as a director, it's like... It's very tiring when you're having to do both. It's very hard. And doing the logistics while doing the creative side of it. And I remember, like, on day two of Hartley, I was like, do I really want to do this for a career? Like, this is, like,
I remember it just as a small side note, like, seeing you on the set of Hartley, and it was getting late that, you know, I wasn't there for forever. I was there that one, I think that one full day-ish, right, for the shot. And you were kind of like, they were changing shots for something, and you were out in the parking lot, like, kind of circling around, muttering to yourself. And I went out, and I was just like, is everything okay, Brandon? Like, I knew you were thinking, but it just didn't seem like you were thinking about the film. It seemed like you were thinking about life. And I had that small little friend, like, I hope he's okay.
And
you were like,
and that was day two, by the way. That was day two. That was probably that instance.
I'm going to be okay. I was like, just let me know if you need help with anything.
For sure.
Yeah, it was because it's like we're having to worry about so many different things. And then when Thomas came in and then we had our AD Jenna, I didn't have to worry about anything. Like, I had to worry about directing the movie, which was a phenomenal feeling. And because I remember at one point, everyone's doing something. We're stuck with a big shot at one point. And I'm just standing there with my binder, just standing there. And Mark walks up, he goes, how does it feel? And I was like, what? He goes, not having to do anything. And I was like, I don't know what to do.
because like I didn't have someone coming and ask me a question or whatever, because everything went through Jenna or it went through Thomas or it went through our line producers, and I just had to worry about directing the film, which in turn, like, I was like, oh, this is why people do this, like, because it was that part was like it was so much fun to get to do that. And if a problem came up, like, I got to discuss it with them. And if it became a major problem, they try to settle it without me being involved. And then they'd bring it to me once it was like, hey, this is what's going on. Like the weather or something like that.
They'd so keep it was everything professional and well-run, basically.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, what you're describing is what is supposed to take place, right? And so that's it's like a professional environment. It's like where I'm at now, the company I'm at now, it's like people are just nice and professional. And you're like, wait a minute, what?
And I guess because what happened this time, because other times when we're at Alabama or the last few things, it was, we always like needed those two or three extra people to help make it work, if that makes sense. And we could have used that as well on this one. But like this time it's like we had the number of people to solve the minimum number of people to solve the problems like that their job required, if that makes sense. It's like you didn't have to go to me and say, hey, the food's not here, what do we do? And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I had someone, like I didn't, I think one day like the food was late or whatever, I had no clue. Like I was not involved in that conversation, which was like, it was a relief. Like, and like there's stuff that happened that I found out after the fact. I'm like, when did this happen? Like I was so confused.
Found something new out yesterday.
Thomas.
What I found out new yesterday. Okay, never mind.
Break some of this news to us. Tell us some of the things since you
some of the some well of you chose not bad, so.
You said you didn't want to direct anymore, you wanted to produce, so did you find as much like joy in this as Brandon is describing? I mean
yeah I producing this is the time
to be honest, because we're this is a private conversation.
Yeah, for the private producing is like a lot of stress, but then you get a really, it's a lot of like the creative part, you know, working with Brandon on the script is awesome. That's probably my favorite part is development. But then you go into pre-production and it's just, and I think that's why I was drawn to producing, because I have the kind of brain that goes to like, okay, this could go wrong. Like at some point I was talking with Brandon about making sure that we had lifeguards on set anytime people were near the lake, and you know, we get there and everyone else on the crew is like, oh yeah, let's put someone in the lake, and I'm like, we don't have a lifeguard here right now, I've got lifeguards lined up, they're coming at this time and we're gonna have lifeguards at this time. But then I was also like, at one point Brandon was like, okay we'll get lifeguards, and I said, yeah, and what if there's an alligator in the lake, what do we do then? We can't put anyone near that lake, there's gonna be an alligator there. So that's just, that's the way that my brain works when I'm on producing mode. So it's a lot of worrying and stressing, and I like to be the buffer for everyone else on the set. But then you get done and you have this big decompression, and now it's, you know, I'm the stress goes back onto Brandon at this point, because like we've got all of our post-production lined up. And it's back on the creative, like I'll give my input. I'm really excited to see it get formed, but I'm not waking up every day worrying about, you know, whether somebody's going to get hurt on set or whether we're not going to have food show up or whether we're going to make our schedule or something.
Yeah. And even that way for me, like it was a fun process, but the real fun moments were, I think Ben and I, you and I have talked about this before. When we did a film that didn't go too well, was it wasn't the church, it was a different movie, you know what I'm talking about. But we talked about how like the best moments were the times when you were with the crew or with the cast or whatever outside of it, when it was like those are the moments you remember of going out afterwards and getting a drink or going out to the house and watching CMF movies. You honestly don't remember that take three of that shot was the best one. You remember the other stuff. So that's the fun part. When it comes to the story and creative part, The more fun things for me, like Thomas, are the prep development stage and then post-production, which I'm in, but not really in until I see a cut.
I mean, the thing that I miss the most, I guess, about day-to-day filmmaking, you know, or any, you know, just the structure of it, right, is that, like you said, Thomas, it's that you have that early pre-production where you're writing, it's the creative, and I love that, right? A lot of people do. That's a great, like, you have all ideas and very little execution at that point, right? You're just trying to craft words on a page and you're not fighting weather or whatever, right? But that team part where you know the film is so special, to sound cheesy, but in that way where it's like, you know, I'm on a team right now for the app I'm working on, but you know, we're not fighting weather, we're not hoping that lunch shows up. I mean, we're under deadline, right? And next week is going to be a rush, but it's a very rare and kind of wonderful thing when it works, when you have a good crew, when it works out. Or even if it doesn't, right? Because you're building up these stories. And I think it's clear. Like, that's, people get addicted to that. I understand that. That's why people do this their whole lives. And it's like, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme for the most part, if ever. But it's, you know, I think it's a rare form in that sense. It's like, you know, other things get close, theater and some other things, right? Where you build up this whole structure and then tear it down, you know, with each production. But yeah, that's cool.
And going off that, because team is the big word, and that I think is important for film, that a lot of people kind of forget, that it is a team. And I kind of have, because I grew up around sports, being from Alabama, seeing football and playing basketball. And a film crew to me, and a film in general, is like a sports team. Is that just because you have the best players on the team doesn't mean it's going to work and have the best outcome. It's like every person is important on the team, but they might be a role player. They might be the big, like the top guy. Like, you have to, when choosing my crew or our crew, it's very specific of who will work well together, who can bring something to the process, to the final product. Because USC, I'll talk about this a brief second. Sometimes USC projects, or really film school projects in general, people get placed in head positions, or people are chosen to be in head positions when, like, the director producer don't really know them, or the director and producer don't really know each other. What I tell people is that I'm not hiring a department head that I don't know personally, like that I don't know for a long time. Like, everyone that worked on Camp Nichols in a department head position, I've known for, you know, on a personal and social level for at least a year. Like, I need to know them, and we need to know them. And that's the big thing. And then some of them I've known professionally for a while as well.
Well, and because it is that, because you want that collaboration, not everybody does, right? I mean, people, I want to, you know, they want to bark orders at people, but because that's what you want, yeah, you have to be able to know what the vibe of the combination of people is, you know, and that, and just like we were, you know, if you try and do 16-hour days repeatedly and lose confidence, if people lose confidence in who's running the ship, you know, or you add a bad apple to the mix, right? I mean, it doesn't take much to have a team fall apart very quickly. That's what makes it so special, right? Is when it works, even just good-ish, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's great, like when it's really great and everyone's gelling, that's a rare thing, because it's not about the camera or the equipment or even the location or the weather. It's whether all those humans who have to all kind of fight all these different things join together in this, like, big process, this big project, you know?
It's cool. And that was something that really stood out for me, because I've had some crews where I've spent the majority of my time as, like, relationship manager, you know? Right. So-and-so's mad at so-and-so, and this crew really was, I had, I think, three just like really small little, like, oh, did you hear so-and-so got annoyed with this department today? And that was it. Like, they just kind of said, like, they snipped at him once, and then that was it. And everyone just kept working again. And It was a huge standout for me, as opposed to like what I'm used to on a set of just these people who are my constant struggles of cast or crew who are just always weighing me down, and like weighing the film down. A lot of times you can see that effect on your schedule.
And like those 3 to 5 instances that might have happened, like 3 of those all happened on the same exact day. And because I remember it was like day 2, him and I had a discussion about here's what happened today. And like, and one of them, there was a argument between 2 people, and the 2 people, like, people didn't know that they were like literally best friends. Like they vent their frustrations to one another, and then the next day they both apologize to one another for what happened. And the other thing, because we're wrapping it, we're coming close to time, with the team thing, but also having, and I'll give him another shout out here, was having a good partner in doing this. And Thomas was that for me, because every decision that was made, even creatively, I wanted to hear his feedback from. So if I auditioned anyone in Tuscaloosa, I was not making a decision or even saying my comments until he saw it and watched it and made his comments. And with the script, he's the first person I sent it to. His notes were the ones I listened to the most and tried to fix. And we had multiple meetings, just like going to lunch, to work on it. And so like without him, it wouldn't have been possible. It wouldn't have been as easy and, as stress free and as it was.
All right, Thomas, this is your turn to say something nice about Brandon.
I'm not asking for it.
Pretty much. Just the reverse side of that. Like I have done a lot of line producing at USC, because it tends to be USC breeds like director producers, so which is a good thing, which is a really good thing, and that's why it was really easy to work with Brandon. But a lot of times when a director brings you on as a producer, they mean they want you to line produce for them. They want you to keep track of the money and keep track of the schedule, and they want to control all the creative stuff themselves. So it was a huge change for me, and this is more of the type of producing I want to be doing, that Brandon let me participate in the development. And you know, throughout, there were a couple times when I could tell where I felt comfortable pulling Brandon aside, if I could tell he wasn't super happy with, you know, what kind of performance he was getting in a scene.
Yeah.
There were a couple times when I could pull him aside and say, hey, just try this direction. And, you know, that was the kind of environment that he created that was collaborative, especially between us, but I think for everyone, which was great. It was a good set.
There was one professor that told, because Thomas and I have had most of the same classes the past few years, and there was one professor that told us that the best idea wins out, and that's what I like to preach. And so if our AD Jenna, our first day, saved our day by saying, hey, what if we shoot this scene here instead of across the camp, because it's right near where we're at, but it actually might be better for the movie and it's better for the story, which is also a big thing. And so that saved our day, and we did that. And then Thomas pulled me aside, because also Thomas, like, he was in the same directing class I was in just a semester ahead of me. So he had the same type of training I did. So it's like, I don't want to shun people for having an idea. You have to make that open for people. And I'm happy that that was possible.
I mean, it sounds like I would love to be on that set. I just, we gotta find a way to make some serious cash out of this, guys. I got to cash out. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm jacked up. I'm ready to see a cut like next Sunday, right, Brandon?
Next Sunday at 2:30.
You're going to be posting it on YouTube and just letting everybody see the cuts all along the way.
Well, actually, by the time this is released, we've already seen it. So we might be crying ourselves to sleep the night before. We could be basking in the glory. Like, we don't know yet. Like,
we'll post a meme with in the show notes. Just go ahead and let people.
Well, okay then. So to end this, we end it with recommendations. Any brief recommendations for everyone? I'm sorry, I'm breaking.
Tell me how it works. No, Brandon.
I want to stick to the format, Ben. So Ben, any recommendations?
I'm reading The 7 Eves by Neal Stephenson. It's a book. It's a space sci-fi book. I'm kind of in. So look,
book
I got
with, like with words on pages.
There's words. We there's talk words about on the page. Here? It's kind of weird.
Is it paper?
It's Well, no, it's an e-book. So it's just it's a e-book. It's a that's collection what, of ones
I knew it.
Zeros.
I knew it.
It's a collection of ones and zeros sequenced in such a way to produce words understandable by the human mind. But I am in a space mode for some reason. I've been playing No Man's Sky, which is a overhyped PS4 PC game. We could talk about that some other time, I guess.
Yeah.
I got this book going on. I got Battlestar Galactica kind of brewing every once in a while. And then I'm really counting down for another space book that's going to release on the 20th, I believe. Part of the Three Body Problem trilogy is finally the final book. Guys, I'm a you know, I guess this makes me sound like a nerd, but I read books. I read books.
You're fine. Okay.
That's excusable.
Thomas?
I have a recommendation for Ben.
Ooh.
Ben, I got something you need to watch right now. Don't wait 10 years. Atlanta started this past week.
Okay.
First two episodes up.
I've been seeing the hype train. What is it on? Because I just signed up for Sling / you know, basically cable through for football.
Yeah, so it's on FX. It's the brainchild of Donald Glover, which I've been hyped for 4 years now, because when he left Community, he announced that he was leaving to work on this show. So it's been in the pipeline for about 4 years. It's really good. The reason I was pitching it directly to you, Ben, is because Lakeith Stanfield from Short Term 12 is one of the main characters in it.
Wow.
Which he is, you know, he's an incredible actor. But he's really interesting. He's playing like the comedic sidekick role, as far as I can tell from the first two episodes, and he's great. He nails it. But I don't know. It's shot really well. It's the same DP that shot Baskets for FX. It's incredibly well acted. The whole cast is great. The story is really interesting so far. So I'm really looking forward to more coming up next week.
I appreciate that personalized recommendation.
Oh man, Lakeith Stanfield is incredible. Like Short Term 12.
Oh yeah,
he's so good. The scene with the fish, the aquarium. Oh man.
Well, he was great. He was good. He was in in Selma as well? I thought he was in Selma.
Yeah,
he's in Selma. He was great in Selma.
Yeah, he was the son.
Yeah.
Of like the.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he was also Snoop Dogg in Straight Outta Compton. Which he was great Snoop Dogg. But yeah, my brief recommendation is an indie movie, because I've been going to the New Art Theater in West LA, not too far from me, next to Cinephile, and I've been going to see a few movies each week there. And I just saw a movie called Complete Unknown with Michael Shannon and Rachel Weisz, or Weisz, how you pronounce it, if you want to do the German V or W. Good little indie movie. It's the critics didn't think too highly of it, but it actually... It was marketed as a thriller. It's nowhere near a thriller. It's a drama. It's great performances by the two, and it's just a really fun little movie they made for a low budget. And just Miles Shan's a great actor to watch, and Rachel is as well. So something to check out if you can, if it's near you, if you're in a major city like Atlanta, maybe even Portland, or Los Angeles.
Maybe Portland's a major city. Maybe it's not.
Maybe Portland or New York. Yeah, you should check it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so anyway, so make sure you follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Medium. Maybe Ben will write something here in the next 5 months. We'll never know. will Rogue One suck? That's probably what he needs to do. And then... make sure what else we have Medium. Make sure you follow us, and make sure if you want to write for us, just send us your stuff. We'll read it. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Write us a review. That's how we find out more about what you guys think of us. Guys, thank you for coming on again. Thanks for doing the interview, Ben, and talking with us about our film.
Anytime, Brandon. I'm glad to be on here.
You did just help create it. It's no big deal.
No, I mean, I guess I just feel like any day that I'm alive to do this is a good day. So, too dark? Was that too dark?
No,
it didn't seem that dark to me.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys listen to more episodes soon.